Welcome to the Hollywood Outsider, an award-winning weekly entertainment podcast. In this episode, we are reviewing Werewolves Within, Luca, and discussing the Steven Spielberg deal with Netflix. And our topic this week are movies that stand the test of time. Let's get on with the show. My name's Aaron Peterson. Joining me today are my fellow hosts, Amanda Sink.
Hello, hello.
And Troy Heinrichs.
I am back again. What's up, bitches?
You are. John Davenport is still on sabbatical. No update. We'll let you know when we have one.
He is still alive, though. Like, I feel like maybe we should mention that.
I don't know that for a fact. I mean,
sabbatical doesn't mean grave.
I'm just kidding. I talked to him today. Yes, he's alive.
If I come back next week, is it like a common law thing where I'm like the permanent host after three shows? I'm just wondering.
It's possible. Are you free all summer? I'll call John and see what he says.
I am, because the blacklist ends this week. So woohoo!
Thank all that is holy. Just thank all that is holy. That's all I'm going to say about that.
Ouch.
We are going to talk about timeless movies. We were actually going to talk about fan theories, but after Blacklist, I just can't anymore. I just can't. But this really came out. This is pretty exciting. I found this a fascinating read. So Vin Diesel did an interview for Men's Health where he was asked about his feud with The Rock. And he actually said, and I want to quote him, "My approach at the time," he's talking about Fast Five and those movies, "was a lot of tough love to assist in getting that performance to where it needed to be. As a producer, to say, okay, we're going to take Dwayne Johnson, who's associated with wrestling, and we're going to force the cinematic world, audience members, to regard his character as someone that they don't know. Vin, I don't know if you knew this, but Hobbs is literally The Rock, hyper-realized."
Yeah, I'm pretty sure he's got this, man.
It was one of my favorite things I read all week.
He is an entertainer in the ring when he was wrestling. I think he's got the ability to act all tough and macho. I am the Calvary woman.
Well, it just cracks me up. It's like, I don't know if Vin Diesel is watching his own. No, don't get me wrong. There are moments where he has range. I think Saving Private Ryan, Vin Diesel's great. Knockaround Guys, he's got a great piece in that. But come on, man. I mean, the Fast movies are not high art. And you didn't have to get The Rock to where he needed to be. The Rock was already there. He was waiting for you to show up. All right. He was ready to go. He's the
Rock. Let's be clear. I mean, Vin Diesel is the best part of Tokyo Drift.
Wow.
You mean the only good part?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. We can agree on that. We can definitely agree on that. In fact, when he shows up, it's almost like this movie was just made worth it. Almost.
Almost.
I just read that and I just thought that was pretty interesting. So I wonder what he does to bring the performances up in XXX movies. You know what I mean? Like, what's he doing to really get those people where they need to be?
Lifts them up, throws them where he wants them to go.
It's possible. Ah, all right. Well, normally we have a news roundup where we talk about all the things that happened in entertainment over the past week, and there really hasn't been much, but I want to talk about one thing in particular. And that's Steven Spielberg. And he's been a longtime advocate for the cinema. Very adamant that movies belong in theaters. He's a big proponent of film. He doesn't like to shoot on digital. He just loves movies and movie theaters. Well, he and Amblin Pictures, which is the company he runs, signed a deal with Netflix, which will coexist with Amblin's deal with Universal. So it's not cutting that deal out. It's an additional deal. Neither will have first shot at Amblin properties. Spielberg will make some films for Universal and others will be made for Netflix. And they won't necessarily be directed by Spielberg. It's Amblin Entertainment. So here's what he said. "At Amblin, storytelling will forever be at the center of everything we do. And from the minute Ted Sarantos, who runs Netflix, and I started discussing a partnership, it was abundantly clear that we had an amazing opportunity to tell new stories together and reach audiences in new ways. This new avenue for our films, alongside the stories we continue to tell with our longtime family at Universal and other partners, will be incredibly fulfilling for me personally since we get to embark on it together with Ted. And I can't wait to get started with him." So what do we think about this? I mean, streaming is it finally going legit? Is Netflix a studio now, not just the content factory? I mean, how do you see this?
Do we just say, sell out? Hey, Steve, sell out. Going to say that streaming stinks and you can only put it in movie theaters and then you just take the big paycheck? What's up, Steve?
Are you blasting Steven Spielberg right now?
I'm just saying, it's like, he was all about the big thing, and he was part of that whole Netflix movies can't be up for Oscars. And now he's, oh yeah, you want to send me a check? Sure, no problem.
He denies he says that, by the way. We should say he denies he says that, but many people said he said it. So
yeah. But maybe the good movies are going to go to Universal and the not so good movies are going to go to Netflix. I don't know. Because if Amblin gets to choose which service gets what, then you obviously have some creative control. I mean, with the quality entertainment they put out, like some of the TV shows that Amblin has produced that I've done podcasts for potentially.
Well, Trial of Chicago 7 was an Amblin film. That was fantastic. And that went to Netflix. One of the few Netflix movies I would say is great, because most Netflix movies make me feel like, why do you make movies? Because you don't obviously care about them being good. But that's an exception. Like, there's a few exceptions to that rule.
But does Amblin get the credit for that? Or does Sorkin get the credit for that? And do the acting get credit for that?
Well, I mean, honestly, it was made for theaters. And then because of everything that happened, it went to streaming. So technically, I would say Sorkin and Amblin get credit. Both get credit for that. It's like Netflix got lucky in that one. It wasn't a Netflix production. It was just something that they kind of bought up.
And it's not like Amblin has put out a lot of crap movies or anything. If you look at the catalog, they have a lot of big, big hits. I mean, when you have Spielberg heading something, I feel like that's bound to happen. He's just such a creative visionary. But I don't feel like this is a sellout from Spielberg. And I feel like this is a good direction for Netflix, because what they're trying to do is set the precedent that Netflix can be a little bit of both. They know mm-hmm. that they have to premiere some of their films in theaters for at least 1 week in the Cali, LA area for Oscar qualification. And so if they're going to be Amblin films, they're probably going to be going for Oscar qualification and nominations. That's what I would anticipate anyway. So they're going to probably be in theaters, which is going to appeal to Steven Spielberg, whether he said that or not. And so I feel like this is a good option for all of us, because we're going to get some really good quality films that are going to be available in theaters for a certain period. But then we're also going to be able to see them on the streaming service. And I want Netflix to succeed. Netflix has, I mean, they're the reason we have everything that we have now. They are really the company that rivaled cable companies. Like, I never thought that somebody would be able to take Comcast down like eight pegs and say, nah, man, we don't really need you. And that's what Netflix did. Netflix made television and entertainment affordable. And it changed everything for us. Even if you only subscribe to Netflix, you can still only pay $8 a month and you can have a plethora of content to choose from.
I don't pay $8. What's this deal? I pay a hell of a lot more than that.
If you pay more, you get HD or you get multiple screens. But if you're just going for the bare minimum, you can get it for like $7.99 or $8.99 or something like that.
What's a bargain?
That's a discussion. Like, why should I have to pay for HD anymore? HD is the standard, and I should pay for the 4K because it takes up more bandwidth. Why am I paying for HD still?
Maybe because there's people who don't have TVs that accommodate that still. People who don't have the money to upgrade their televisions to see it in HD. They're like, why should I have to pay for HD when my TV is not going to create HD appearance? Just like if I didn't have a 4K, I wouldn't want to pay extra for 4K movies.
It's been 15 years since HD came out. I think we've upgraded our TVs in at least 15 years.
I'm not here to money shame.
I will. I'll be more than happy to jump on that money shame train. Yeah. I mean, at this point, I see where Troy's coming from. Like, I get how you paid extra for that like 10, 15 years ago. But now, I mean, you're right. 4K should be the extra. 4K is HD from 10 years ago. It's the new version of HD. So it just feels like that's just one way they can get you. Because, well, then we don't have to raise the rates, but we can still kind of raise the rates. Because everything that they have is going to be HD anyway. Because most of their catalog is Netflix stuff, which is already HD or 4K.
Well, and I think the other question too is if this whole play is to get content that's movie quality, they had movie quality content before.
Did they?
If they got the kind of money to throw around to buy a Spielberg or buy Amblin content, like, shouldn't they be going out there and trying to pick up like a ArcLight Cinema or Alamo Drafthouse or by some kind of small theater chain that went under during the pandemic because Netflix can own a theater chain now.
I don't know if they're really interested in that, though. I think they just want to have... I feel like right now Netflix has a situation where they finally got to the point where they have the content they want. You know, they've been talking about this whole content thing for years. We want to get at least half of our catalog is Netflix owned, right? They wanted to get to that point. Understandable, because you knew at some point other streamers were going to latch on and start their own thing. So you need your own content. Well, they've been churning out movies left and right for years and hardly any of them catch any steam. I mean, most of them are kind of seen as afterthoughts. I mean, honestly, when you look at them, direct to video is what really springs to mind for a lot of them. You'll get a few that hit, you know, you'll get Extraction was huge, or you'll get, you know, Fatherhood that came out last week. I heard a lot of people raving about that as a great movie, but the majority of them are not really anything you would call great. They're just watchable. And I think Netflix wants to get to a point where they have more Trial of the Chicago Sevens. They have more Goonies. They have more movies that are really getting people excited versus stuff that really doesn't interest people, you know, rewatchable stuff. Netflix needs more rewatchable content. I don't know how many of their movies that I would say are rewatchable at this point.
They have that for television shows, sure, but they don't have that for movies. That's really where I think they need additional support. And so Spielberg coming in with his company and saying, let's create movies that people are going to rewatch. I mean, think about the most rewatch. I think this was a conversation in our Facebook group. So go to facebook.com/TheHollywoodOutsider. And it was about who's the most rewatchable director. And a lot of people were talking about Spielberg. Most of his films, you could rewatch and rewatch and rewatch and rewatch. And most of us have done so. And if he's part of this agreement, which he is, I feel very confident in saying that we're going to get a lot of content on Netflix that is rewatchable, which is something that they don't have right now. So I think this is a good move on their part. And to the point about theaters, they have saved some, they have purchased some cinemas. They just don't use them in the way that they're traditionally used. So they use them for more like premieres and events and things like that. And so they do kind of have a piece of that pie, a very, very small piece. And maybe they'll take that direction as they see more films coming on their platform that would be good candidates for the Oscars. So then they can say, yeah, we played it at our LA cinema.
Yeah. Well, that's a portion of it. Yeah.
Yeah.
Not that they were necessarily saying yay COVID, but if I was Netflix, I mean, I'd be thinking, yay COVID. It worked out great for them. Plus, they got their movies qualified. Like, people are stuck at home. That's where you get a bigger audience. You'd think they would actually have a lot more subscriptions than they garnered over the past year. But they also made that entryway into the Oscars. And it might be permanent. We haven't heard for sure on that yet.
Well, do you think that this is a countersuit or counterplay to Amazon purchasing MGM, which just happened in the last week? Granted, it's not a definitive and it's got to close and take a year.
It's not as big a deal.
So you think that this is Netflix's response to that?
No, I don't think it's as big a deal. I mean, now,
I don't think that they could have put this around that quick.
That'd be huge. If they bought they got their catalog and they got all that. But I don't think that's the case.
I don't think that they would have been able to turn it around that quick.
Right.
An agreement with Steven Spielberg isn't something that you can just like whip up and say, okay, it's been 2 weeks. Let's roll this out to the media. It's something that you're going to be working on for a while. He does not strike me, and, you know, I'm just obviously thinking off the top of my head at this second.
Oh, you know Steven Spielberg, do you? You just know Steven.
I can't think of too many press releases, at least in the recent years, of agreements he's been making with other companies for his films. This is a very big deal, and I don't think it's something that is... that he would just agree to short term. He would really have to think on it probably, because it is a big deal. And it does signal to viewers and filmmakers and actors and everything like that what his intention is. He's a big director. So if he's making a big move, people are going to, in the industry, are going to notice that. And they're going to say, okay, so what does this mean for us? Are we anti-streamer content actors willing to do this?
And are there any of those left anymore? I mean, at some point, your career kind of demands it, doesn't it? I don't know if there's any actors that are still not going there.
I haven't seen Meryl Streep doing any.
Maybe it just hasn't been a product worth her talents to do.
Exactly. I think a lot of those high esteemed actors, you know, maybe they just, they haven't seen quality, you know, worthy of their talents.
Tom Hanks just did it. He's done like two. He sold to Apple in the last year.
Yeah, but Greyhound was originally a theatrical release that got moved to streaming.
Right. Yeah. You mean they're not actually just taking that streamer money off the bat?
Right, right. And they're still big theater supporters. And so, you know, do they change some of that and say, okay, well, I'm okay with shorter term theater premieres? You know, a lot of these movies, I would be shocked if Spielberg didn't have them in the theater at all. Again, even just for that minimum Oscar qualification.
Sure. Well, we'll definitely know more about that later. Let's move on. Remember, you can always find more information at thehollywoodoutsider.com, our Facebook group, like Amanda said, The Hollywood Outsider, or on Twitter at BuyPopcorn. And if you want to support us on Patreon, it's P-A-T-R-E-O-N, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. We have exclusive content directly for our patrons, including Bad Movie Night, where we talk about a movie that other people don't like, but we find something positive to say about. Our next one, we're going to do Fast and Furious Tokyo Drift. That's going to be more difficult. It's going to be a little harder. We're going to get there. And we also have a monthly exclusive podcast to patrons. All right. So again, patreon.com/thehollywoodoutsider. Now we've got two spoiler-free reviews. The first one is Luca. It's on Disney Plus, and he lives on the second floor. I'm going to keep making that joke as many chances as I can, because this is probably the last opportunity I have. He lives upstairs from Troy. A young boy experiences an unforgettable seaside summer at the Italian Riviera, filled with gelato, pasta, and endless scooter rides. Luca shares these adventures with his newfound best friend, but all the fun is threatened by a deeply held secret that he is a sea monster from another world just below the ocean's surface. So, I don't know, he's a kaiju, I guess? The story is a little bit like The Little Mermaid, if the mermaid were a monster and just looking for a friend, right? Am I right about that, Troy?
I mean, yeah, it's they're not really monsters. They're cute and cuddly. I mean,
of course.
They're not mermen, but they're like seahorse type. I mean, they're not exactly scary sea monsters.
Like those things we bought as a kid and you like threw them in the bowl of water and then supposedly like 2 weeks later you'd see them.
Yeah, kind of. Exactly like that. They're just little, they're not cute and cuddly like Nemo, but they're not like scary and foreboding like Kaiju or Godzilla coming out of the ocean by any stretch of the imagination. But they are two independent quote unquote races, if you will, the sea monsters versus the humans, which the sea monsters refer to lovingly as the land monsters. Ooh, you know, cause you know, sea monsters and land monsters, it's so, I mean, creative. I can't believe that people came up with this at Pixar. The basic premise is that you have Luca and his friend Alberto, and the one thing that's like you think would be the catch or the trick or the surprise of the movie is that the sea monsters actually can transform into humans when they are dry and on the land, where the humans, obviously, if they go in the water, if they can't swim, they would drown. So the whole point of the movie is basically how do they explore the human world without getting wet? That's the whole thing.
Okay. Now, do you feel like this is a real, genuine, feel-good, typical Pixar story? Because I remember when you were watching it, you were about halfway through and you thought it was really kind of bland. But I think it got better as it went, right? That's the impression I got. So is the story kind of, it takes a while to find its footing? Is it not as immediately engaging as other Pixar movies? I mean, what's the deal with Luca?
Yeah, there is no amount of pesto that you could put on a pair of bland pasta because this is just like, oh my. The first half hour, honestly, I fell asleep at the 30-minute mark and I had to like rewind probably 15 minutes and start.
Ouch, that's not a rousing endorsement. Although, again, put it on the poster, right? I fell asleep at 30 minutes, but I rewound it, got better.
Well, it didn't get better until maybe about 45, 50 minutes where they're truly immersed in the human world doing human things. And then you figure out, well, what's the comedy shtick around how do I not get wet? You know, when they have to go out on a fishing boat or they have to play around a fountain or, you know, there's a garden hose in the back of the house. You know, so those are the things that are kind of like, okay, this is kind of cute and fun. And there is a, you know, find yourself, climb the hill, champion type moment story that's buried in here in the mix of everything. But at the same time, it's so god awful boring for 45 minutes, which is literally half the movie, that by the time you get to the meat of what a Pixar movie should be, you really don't care. And I'm the Pixar snob. I literally have a book that Aaron bought for me about Pixar, because that's how much I love Pixar movies. Most of the reviews you've seen on the Hollywood Outsider have been me doing Pixar reviews, and you'll see a review for Luca up there on the website as well. This is not good for Pixar, unfortunately. And I think maybe they knew that, and that's why it went to the streamer, but It is not Inside Out. It is not Up. It is not even Toy Story 4 is way better than this.
Yeah. Speaking of, this went to Disney Plus, and it wasn't even with that premier $30 price point, which was really shocking. I mean, I'm sure people were like, great, I get a free, you know, family movie, which is exciting. But the other Pixar movie, Soul, went for $30. I mean, Mulan went for $30. That's what they've been doing.
Well, no, Soul is actually free.
Oh, no, Soul was also free. I'm sorry. You're right. Soul was free.
Raya and the Last Dragon, which was from the Disney Animation Studios side, that one went for $30.
Correct. Thank you for correcting me. I'm okay being wrong when it happens. It just doesn't happen often enough. Does that mean the animation is lacking, or is the production? I mean, I know you talked about the story, but is the animation lacking, or the production a little lesser in some capacity? Or no, it really looks like the normal stupendous Pixar, just the story.
Well, I think this kind of rolls in for our topic later this evening as well, with like classic movies and can you watch it today? I don't know if I'm just accustomed to it, because I did upgrade my TV to a 4K TV, even an HD TV it looked fine on, because I watched part of it on an HD screen. It just didn't pop to me like Nemo did. When you saw Nemo and Nemo jumps out of the water, and the difference between the underwater stuff and the above water stuff, this just didn't have the same kind of like, ooh, that like, that's like, wow, I can't believe how clear and crystal that is. It just, yeah, in the human animation was okay, but they made him kind of gimmick. It looked like, if I had to compare it to something, it looked like the animation from Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Okay. So it was kind of like a caricature in ways.
Yeah, it wasn't like it was bad, but it was like, this is what Pixar did. When I saw a animated umbrella go through real life people to find out that the real life people were also animated, I mean, I was like, this is what we're resorted to. I was kind of like, ugh, like Pixar might be in a world of hurt.
It's a Buffy the Vampire Slayer reference. You're welcome.
Totally.
I was hoping Amanda would catch it at least.
That's exactly how I felt watching Luca, unfortunately. I was really excited because it's Father's Day weekend. Pixar is always the big thing for Father's Day weekend. And I was like, I got to watch this for the hoe. So I didn't even watch it with my kids. And then when I told my kids, I was like, we're not watching this together.
Wow.
You guys can watch The Conjuring or something. It's probably better.
The Conjuring. Well, the voice work has the usual assortment of no names mixed with stars, with Jacob Tremblay voicing Luca himself. So any standouts from the cast? Anybody that really stood out, like the voices were really hit it for you?
No, I think they did a really good job. Both the boys, the Alberto is played by Eddie from It. Mm-hmm. He did a great job. I think the way that they portray the expressions from being a sea monster versus the expressions when they're humans and being able to capture that, because you obviously have that underwater kind of acting you got to do versus when you're on land, you have that kind of different tone that they put over the movie. I think that they're actually able to make that shine, so it works. Emma Berman plays Julia, the female that befriends Alberto and Luca in the movie. I thought she was delightful. She's the comedy relief of the movie. She's super funny. She's jumping around and having a good time. And they sleep in this treehouse outside of her window, so they are on the second floor in a way. And Julia is the delight, an absolute delight. Mom and dad are fine. You know, I think at the end of the day, this one comes down to story. It was like, hey, let's regurgitate the Little Mermaid and make a cool twist where if they get wet, people are going to see them and then shoot them with spears.
All right. Well, if $10 full price of admission, what do you give Luca?
The review, I gave it $6.50.
That sounds like that's a positive score.
It's watchable. The end of the movie.
That's not. That feels like better than watchable, man. And that's good.
No, I mean, like $5 is like you'll watch it. $6 is like a rental. Like if it was a rental, $3,
Sure. Hey, you're new here. I think we're going to have a talk about your scores. That's all I'm saying. We're going to have to a little talk about your scores. That's all.
My scores are 6 is a rental, 7 is a matinee, 8 is prime time, 9 is there was something special, and only Amanda gives out 10s.
It's fair.
Okay, I'm feeling a little tacked.
All right, well, we're going on to, speaking of attacked, we're going to the next movie, Werewolves Within, which I saw. Amanda, did you get a chance to see it?
Not yet, but it is on the top of my radar.
Okay, so comes out June 25th in theaters and on video on demand July 2nd, Werewolves Within.
A snowstorm traps town residents together inside the local inn where newly arrived forest ranger Finn and postal worker Cecily, is that how you say it?
That's Cecily. A weird name. Cecily.
That's even weirder. Must try to keep the peace and uncover the truth behind a mysterious creature that has begun terrorizing the community. So, first of all, I feel like we need to discuss how much you love werewolf movies.
I do.
But also how rare it is for you to love a werewolf movie. Mm-hmm. So, the fact that you've given this a great review, spoiler alert, shocks me. So, talk to me a little bit about how the monsters move, interact, and look, and how the werewolf cliches, if any, show up.
Oh, that's awesome, because I can't talk to you about the werewolves at all, if there are any.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, well, see, the whole plot of the movie is they think there's a werewolf, but is there? That's the whole plot of the movie. So I could tell you what I think about the question you asked, but if I did so, it would definitely have to be a spoiler. It would tell you one way or the other if there are any.
Okay. So we'll just skip past that whole section then.
So here's a cool idea. The next time you mention my review, read it. I'm just saying. I'm just throwing it out there. It's pretty detailed on this.
Okay, so Werewolves Within is directed by Scare Me's Josh Rubin, which, in my opinion, was a great time and very creative. Do you feel like this next in Rubin's lineup makes him for a director to keep an eye on?
Yes, actually, I think this really makes him a must-see director. The tone here, as I keep referring to it, is like The Burbs and Clue had a child and Gremlins dropped by to babysit. Like, that's the tone for the movie. It's very funny, quirky, jovial, but also gory, violent, maniacal in some ways. I mean, there is a killer on the loose. It's not gonna a movie where you get to the end and, oh, everybody's okay. There are actually deaths. There are stakes involved in terms of, you know, the danger. And it really plays like kind of a Knives Out with werewolf potential. The whole idea of the movie is that there are murders happening. They don't know who's doing it. It's a sleepy small town. So they obviously, there's a blizzard that keeps them confined to their small town, and they have to figure out who the murderer is before they either end up dead or the murderer escapes. One of the two. I mean, so they have to find out who the killer is. And it's very Knives Out, but they have in their heads that it's a werewolf. So they are desperate to find out, was it a werewolf? Or was it just a neighbor? Because there's a lot of background, a lot of drama, a lot of gossip and salacious talk about other neighbors. There's a pipeline going into this town and the community is divided about it. You know, half are for it. It's not political, but there are definitely political undertones discussed. I mean, it's, you know, are you for the pipeline, which might destroy the forest, but you'll get rich? Are you against it? Because, you know, you just like the beautiful landscape and you don't want anything touched. Where are you? And so all this stuff combines to a pretty, pretty wonderful little murder mystery, werewolf, possibly thriller. And Ruben nails that tone.
That's awesome. He is extremely talented. I can't wait to see this one. And I want to talk a little bit about the casting, since you already touched on the tone of it. When we have our two main actors, I would say, from what I can gather, Sam Richardson and Milana Vaintroub, who's the AT&T chick. That's kind of how I know her.
I always feel so bad that that's what she's known for, because she's very talented. Like, those commercials are great, but yes. She's very talented.
So you talk about in your review how smoothly they are towing the line between being just characters and then characters is how you framed it in your review. Mm-hmm. So talk to me a little bit about how, if one of them stands out more than the other, and how they manage to not become caricatures when you're in a film that sounds a little bit campy horror and maybe satirical in terms of the comedy.
It's both. It's satirical and it's campy, but it's never too much of either one. that make sense? It's the townsfolk that are riding the line between caricature and character. I would say Cecily and Finn, the two lead characters, they're both very much grounded characters. Like, they have arcs by the time the movie's over. The townsfolk are a little, like I said, half of the town is split. Half want this pipeline, so that, you know, they want the money that it'll bring. They want to open their own businesses and that sort of thing, springing from that money. And half of them just want to live because they're comfortable already financially. They just want to enjoy the quiet outdoors. So there's a lot of back and forth, and there's some extreme characterizations that kind of ride, that toe that line between character and caricature, where it gets a little too campy, where it's over the top, you know, where we have our hillbillies who are a little too hillbilly sometimes, where we have our red states who are a little too red state, we have our blue state that are a little too blue state. I mean, they ride the line, but neither one of them or any of them really go too far over to where they can't come back. And that's kind of what I'm trying to say with that.
But Milana Vantrub, she's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. She's the standout.
There's a reason why AT&T had to bring her back, because nobody gave a damn about subscribing to AT&T until she came back, because she's that good. She has such a razor sharp wit. She's very clever. Sam Richardson is great. I'm not knocking him in any way, shape, or form. He really expands on his work from Veep, if you ever watch that show. But Milana just has this, I don't know, this it factor. Like, she just, every scene she's in, she makes it better. When she's not there, you want her to come back. And it's not just because I like AT&T commercials. She's just that talented and funny. She's got so many quick asides and side eyes and just retorts that work great. You know, there's people constantly trying to rub her back, and she's always got a smooth little exit from that, or a comment about it, or something. You know, time's up. That means you too. You know, just little asides and jokes that I think are just so well timed and placed.
So the last thing I want to talk to you about is how this is a video game adaptation, because I feel like this is kind of being missed a little bit.
Shocked me. And I didn't know that.
Yeah. Yeah. So, okay. First of all, it sounds like maybe you didn't play the game then.
Didn't know there was a game, Amanda. Did not know.
All right.
Yeah. I just found out. I was like, Ubisoft, virtual reality game that was blah, 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 blah. Yeah. Cool. Didn't know about it.
Okay, so video game adaptation films are notorious for being awful and for trying to cleanly adapt a game into a movie, which the layouts are just so different. So tell me about how this video game adaptation doesn't fail, why it doesn't fail, what other video game adaptation movies could do to succeed like this one.
Well, I researched what the actual game is, and the game, I guess it's a virtual reality game, but you're basically... you're sitting around with your neighbors in a small town, and you're trying to determine which one of them is a werewolf. And the game is like, basically you're hearing different stories about neighbors and the people in your community, and you're trying to kind of figure out who's the werewolf. And that's very, if there is one. And that's very much what this movie is. Sam Richardson, you know, Finn is primarily our detective. You know, he's our peek into this world. Like, he's the one we're following to solve the crime, so to speak. Him and Cecily. On the same token, it's more Finn. So he's kind of assessing these neighbors, this community, because he's new there. He's the only one that doesn't know these people. So he's learning who they are, and he's trying to suss out exactly which one of them is the killer, aka possibly a werewolf. Now, the game does this very similarly. And what this movie does right in terms of a video game adaptation is, the one thing video game adaptations always forget is characters first. Like, characters first. Not bombastic set pieces, not making the gamers happy that they get to see one little scene from their game that they love. It's making sure that the characters even work completely in terms of the setup of the scenario, how it plays out. You spend the first 30 minutes of Werewolves Within building the character, learning who the people in the town are. It's a murder mystery. The most important part of a murder mystery is learning who your suspects are. If you're going to play Clue, you got to know who, you know, Colonel Mustard is, who, you know, Professor Plum are. You need to know who they are, who Miss Scarlet is. So the movie takes the time to get to know these characters before, and they're still quirky, odd characters, before it goes into, like, just slowly building up to bonkers territory. So that's what they get right. That's why they nailed the video game adaptation portion of it, because they took the time to build characters I gave a shit about, to build characters I could actually be interested in if they died, if something happened to them, where are they going? What's going on? What the hell? I mean, all that stuff matters. And most video game adaptations are just trying to do set pieces, really. They just seem to miss that a story and characters are the most important.
Awesome. Well, I really can't wait to check this out. And you said it comes out on July 2nd?
June 25th in theaters, video on demand, July 2nd. Yep.
Awesome. So if the full price of admission were $10, how much would you pay for Werewolves Within?
$7.50. So far, whoa. I would say, yeah, aside from In the Heights, it's the most fun I've had in the movies so far this summer.
Wow.
And put her in more things. She's great. Okay, now we're going to move on to our From the Outside In topic. All right, this week we are discussing timeless movies. Those films that still hold up decades later against modern effects and scrutiny. Now, this is very important. This isn't based on greatness. This isn't the movies we rewatch the most. This isn't something around those lines. That's not what I'm talking about. These are decided by their ability to almost look and feel the same to you now as they did when you first saw them. Doesn't mean like they look like they just released. I don't mean that. I just mean they still hold up in quality, special effects. Just everything about it still really holds up in your eyes. That's what we're talking about. So now, do you think it's fair? Troy, I'll start with you since you haven't talked in a little bit. Do you think it's fair to look at an older film through the lens that we see things through today? Like if it was made in 1975 and we say, God, those effects are awful. Is that fair since we're basing it on the CGI that we currently have?
I don't think so. I think it's hard because when you think about classic movies, it's really our timeless movies. I don't want to say classic, but I know we were having a conversation about what constitutes a classic movie. Like what's the era that you can really call something timeless or classic, if you will? I think that there's a level of, it's not just about CGI, it's about story, it's about the actors and the craftsmanship. And I think if anybody's judging a timeless movie strictly based on, ooh, we get computer graphics today. We were just talking about Luca, right? It's all animated, it's all computer graphics, it's all great. It's never going to be a timeless movie because it's not good from a story perspective. Story matters first. And then how you present that story in a way that people can come back to time and time again, because Netflix wants you to stick in the ecosystem and keep rewatching stuff. I think story trumps CGI every time. So no, I'm not going to say those effects are god awful. I'm going to say things like Star Wars Episode 3 special effects. When you look at them today, yeah, it looks like crap because it was done poorly. Whether that's a timeless film, I don't think it matters if the CGI causes it to be that way. I think if the story's good, you could probably forgive it.
I would say that you can be more forgiving of it, but I would say that there's a distinction I would make for this question. Is it fair to look at them in comparison to what we have today? No, it's not fair. I think that there is, you should kind of reasonably apply, you know, that this is where things were when this movie was made. However, when we're talking about a timeless film, those classics that seem to hold up for decades and decades and decades, that's not something you usually have to worry about. I would say Star Wars is probably one of the fewer ones listed in this classic timeless section that doesn't have the effects that hold up and you can still be forgiving of it. When I think about something like Jaws, I can look at that and say, I know that they didn't have effects. The shark broke. So they adapted and did what they had to do filmmaking wise, and it worked tremendously. I mean, who knows what the movie would have been like if that hadn't happened with the shark. But they made the best of it, and that's still a movie, you know, all these years later, where you can sit back and say, wow, that is creepy. That is, you know, you still are afraid to be in the water. You could be in a pool, an isolated pool, and be like, what's under my feet? What just touched me? You know, so that's where a timeless classic film can still have that effect, even if they didn't have the necessary CGI or budget or anything like that.
You know what's funny is anytime you watch Jaws or with some people, they're always going to tell you, you know, the shark didn't work the whole time, right? Like, it's not the most known film fact in history, but inevitably right. someone will at some point tell you.
They wrote the script as the movie went along.
Yeah, it's great. Fantastic movie.
I mean, Tracy's actually a really good, my wife. She's a great example of this. So when she started her Star Wars journey, she watched episodes 1, 2, 3 first in the 90s in the theater. And then before I let her watch A New Hope, we actually watched Rogue One first and then watched A New Hope like almost immediately after.
Oh, your version of a proper order kind of thing?
Yeah.
Okay.
Just because she had never seen 4, 5, and 6. So why not watch it in the chronological order? And she said that she actually liked A New Hope better than Rogue One because it's a better story.
Hmm.
Yeah. Rogue One is garbage.
The effects didn't bother her at all. So I would say Star Wars A New Hope is a timeless movie.
Well, let me ask you about it. Let me speak to that. Okay. So we're talking about Star Wars holds up. I get it. But those effects that you're watching, unless you have, you know, a very coveted version of it, are not the original effects. So does that count? Like, does that count as a timeless movie if George Lucas kept tinkering with the damn thing?
Oh.
Legit question.
I guess it depends on if a re-release is considered the original theatrical version, or if you're comparing the timeless to the theatrical version.
Well, you can't really get like the HD original theatrical anymore. I mean, I've got it on DVD, but it's also in 2.0. I mean, they didn't make it in, you know, so I mean, it still holds up, I think, but nobody's watching that version. Everybody's watching the one that Lucas made the explosions better and added a bunch of stuff to. So does that still count as timeless? Because I would argue that the Jabba the Hutt scene, right, that they inserted into A New Hope.
Oh, we don't talk about that, though.
It's really bad, isn't it? Like, it's bad.
It's really bad.
So that, to me, it actually killed, I'm going to say it, and people can get mad if they want. To me, that kills the timeless aspect of it because it was timeless until you added that. That hurt the movie to me. That took it from being a perfect movie to being an imperfect movie.
He walked behind a guy and stepped up on a step stool and stepped off the step
it's
stool.
It's so distracting.
It's so bad.
So distracting. But you get what I'm saying, though? It's like,
totally.
I love Star Wars. I really, really do. Even though I don't love all the new stuff, I love Star Wars, the original trilogy especially. And that first one was a movie I watched over and over, and I just love the original version. I didn't care that the explosion wasn't as sexy as George Lucas could possibly manage. It looked great to me. And it still looks, you know, I've got that old version. I still look at it now and again. Holds up. And then, yes, the new explosion looks better, but the other stuff kind of hurt the film. Like, that Jabba the Hutt scene is bad.
Giant monster that blocks, Mos Eisley on Tatooine when they come up for the first time, and it's like the monster walks across the screen, like, so close to the screen. It's like, oh my gosh, mm-hmm. Like, what is up with that?
Didn't see the camera there.
Well, and I feel like there's a distinction between a timeless film, which is what we're talking about, and a classic. I would say that Star Wars falls into the classic, of course. This is something that's embedded into our pop culture. It is something that everyone knows. But being a timeless film in the way that we're talking about it, where the effects and everything hold up the same, we would have to look at it and say, I'm not affected by the way the effects are in this movie. And from everything you're both saying, you even agree that this does not hold up the same as it did when you had seen it in the theaters. So to me, then I would say that this is not timeless. It's still just a classic.
I would put Empire as timeless, but I would not put the original Star Wars as timeless, because if I watch it now, I grin and over several pieces where the, you know, Geppetto couldn't stop tinkering in his shop.
I suppose that's true. There isn't a lot of changes in the Empire. Because even Return of the Jedi has some really egregious changes as well in Jabba's palace.
Cloud City, but I like that change.
I guess the question is are you judging it based on Star Wars Episode 4 or Star Wars Episode 4.5?
I would say you have to base it on the version that you watch. And currently we can't watch the original version because it doesn't really exist anymore in most forms.
Well, you and I can.
Well, yeah.
Well,
but
I would...
Yeah. hard to do. It
I would also say, if you were to show this to your wife, for example, Troy, you were talking about how your wife had not seen Star Wars, and so you introduced it to her. Say that your illegal ways had not worked or something. However, you would see the original. She would be watching the 4.5. So for sure. It would be, you know, a timeless film, in my opinion, at least, and how I see and define them is you could show it to your child or your grandchild or something, and they're still going to like it and enjoy it and engage with it, even if they didn't see it when it came out. But then it still is enjoyable for them. The effects hold up for them, even if they're like, wow, that's different. It's not like, dang, they messed up here. You know, it's there's a distinction for me in that respect, too.
I think it's fair.
Interesting. That was an interesting debate. I kind of wonder what listeners think. Like, does Star Wars count? Does it count? Can it count? Or does it, if you're not bothered by it, and I guess maybe it could register as timeless for you. But in terms of the question, yeah, I mean, I'm with you guys, and it's not really fair to judge it by today's effects. I mean, timeless means I can just watch it and it holds up, regardless of when it was made. You know, like Jurassic Park is one I know many people talk about. If you watch Jurassic Park today, the effects are not distracting. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, no. Totally awesome.
Yep. This is on my list.
Every day and twice on Sunday.
See? So that's the definition of timeless. Whenever the effects were made, it doesn't distract from the movie. Like, it doesn't. Like, Ghostbusters is one where I thought real hard about this. That's not timeless to me. The comedy, the story, all of that is. But as soon as you get to the scene with Rick Moranis and he's looking at the dogs, takes me right out of the movie.
Again. Is that because you're seeing like the up-resed Blu-ray version versus the original DVD?
No, copy? It's because that's never not bothered me. I thought the effects were not great then, and now it really bothers me. And it's not because of how the effects are now. It's I know that they weren't great for the time. You know what I mean? Like, it just, they just never were great effects. It never was seamless. It always looked kind of clunky. And when the dogs run through the streets and everything else. So it's always bothered me. So it's not timeless to me. I can't put it in a timeless category.
Maybe we were just younger at that time, because I thought watching the dogs the first time, it was fine. But yeah, if I watch it now, the dogs definitely are, especially the Rick Moranis running away into the glass at the restaurant. Like, that's just not good.
No, it's not. I mean, classic, definitely one of the best movies of all time.
Right.
Timeless? No, I couldn't put it there. I just couldn't. So here's a question I want to ask, and it's no honorable mentions. You can have all the movies, we'll do them after, but I want one movie. When you think of timeless movies, what is the very first movie you think of and why?
So when you posed the idea for the topic, the first one that came to mind was Back to the Future. This is one that I have a special love for because of the script. I think the screenwriting in this is just brilliant. But even visually, I've watched this movie with people who had never seen it before and are young, so they weren't even alive when it came out, and they still really enjoy it. Nothing bothers them. Nothing bothers me. I feel like, especially for a movie where you're going back in time and the time frames, you're going in the future, and you are now past the point, you know, like, I think it's 2014 or 2015 that they're going to. We're past that point. And if you can still watch that movie past that year where they're going into the future, even knowing, like, okay, none of this stuff really happened, so they didn't predict the future, you know, but that doesn't bother or detract you from enjoying the movie. The movie is still great. It's still fun. And it still is not gimmicky in the time travel thing, which is one of the hardest feats to overcome, I feel like, for a movie. Because if you get too lost in the nuances of how the time travel works and how the ramifications are and everything, then you're kind of clunking down your audience and they're not able to enjoy it as much as they could. Back to the Future does a really great balance of, we have some of the science here that we're going to go into, but it's more about the characters and the fun and the story than it is the travel itself. So it's just one of those that is a classic, but it also stands up for me.
Hmm. You know what? It's funny you say Back to the Future, because this is a movie. This is how good Back to the Future is, right? And I'm going to ruin your childhood here in a second. It's a movie that dabbles in incest, and it has a white guy that totally steals black music, and it's still one of the best movies of all time.
Okay, well, when you put it that way, it makes you uncomfortable.
I'm just saying. But timeless, absolutely.
Not to mention that Doc Brown stole Charlie Chaplin's Hanging from the Clock Tower as well.
Yeah, true. There you go. It's definitely timeless, though. I've watched the sequels, no, not at all. But the first one, for whatever reason, the effects still work. I mean, they were great. It feels pretty flawless. Good one.
I mean, you said pick one, but the one always comes to mind when everyone says timeless movie, I always say It's a Wonderful Life. Like that movie, just, you could watch that movie every single year and you watch the whole thing through and it's super long. And sometimes you're like, oh my gosh, it's so boring. But for some reason, you always watch it when it comes on. But technically, there's no real special effects happening.
Doesn't have to have special effects.
Yeah. But I mean, if you were saying, like, comparing it to like modern day special effects, if you were thinking like something that would actually be there, I'd put Goonies in there. Like Goonies would be the first one that comes to mind, where you could just sit down and watch Goonies any day of the week, 1.0, not Goonies 1.5 with the octopus.
Yeah, that was weird.
See, I would not put this film in the timeless category.
You would or wouldn't?
I would not. I'm not crazy about it.
Goonies or Wonderful Life?
No, I'm talking about It's a Wonderful Life, not the Goonies.
Okay. See, now I'm confused, because Troy already, he couldn't stay with the rules, which, you know, yeah,
I know. He completely
ignored
them.
Which movie is your movie that you're talking about?
The first one I wrote down is It's a Wonderful Life.
Then that's
life.
The movie you're talking about. We'll come. Thank God. I thought Amanda was saying she didn't like Goonies, and then I was just going to have to boot her from the show.
Oh, no, I love Goonies. Yeah, Goonies is great.
But not liking It's a Wonderful Life, I think, is a bigger problem. Why do you hate someone who's obviously grappling with depression? I mean, you're like an advocate for depression and mental health awareness. Okay. This is your movie. And he saves Christmas.
I'm not saying that I don't like the movie. I'm just saying, as someone who saw it many, many, many years after it came out, it does not feel, I don't have that same magical feeling that everybody else does about it. It doesn't. When I watch it, I'm like, yeah, this was made a long time ago. You know, like, I get that feeling. And it's not because...
It's not because it's black and white, though. You're not saying...
No, America. No. It's just... There's certain distinctions about it where it feels like it was made then. And I don't feel like this is something that could have... That would have been made in the same way now. So to me, I think it's a classic film. I totally agree that this is a classic film. I think it's on everybody's like number one for Christmas movies. And
it's
everybody
two,
watches it all the time. But for me,
maybe number three.
You're number three?
Well, yeah, because Elf and Christmas Story are
clearly
above.
See, I feel like
that.
Elf is more of a classic than... Anyway, so... But I feel like... It's
like
a great
I don't even know
movie.
You
I don't disregard the value of it and the beauty of it, but I don't feel like it's timeless.
Feels like you're disregarding all the value of it. Like it's a I mean, wonderful
it covered,
movie.
It covered a lot of topics that were like taboo to talk about at the time when it came out originally, and yet we're still trying to deal with some of those topics even today.
Absolutely.
And that's why it comes out every single year, so people can just get hit over the head over and over and over again with these concepts.
And it's talking about, I mean, it approaches mental health in a beautiful, beautiful way that is so ahead of its time, because nobody, like Troy said, was talking about it at that time. Now it's very topical, obviously. But you had a character for most of the movie, you know, he has a great life, and then it just falls apart quickly for him, and that's how he spirals so quickly and thinks the best thing to do for everybody is me just to die. Like it's such a dark and dour movie in many respects, but it's also a very upbeat, beautiful movie. And to me, it holds up. If it's not timeless for you, man, so be it. I mean, for Troy it is, but you know, it's not for everybody. And it introduced, by the way, the splitting basketball court, the pool underneath that court was one of the coolest things I'd ever seen in my life. And I really still, if I ever become filthy rich, I'm getting one. Okay, well, mine is Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Of course it is.
Of course it is.
Is it wrong?
I'm shocked.
Is it wrong?
Sorry, I hang on. I fell out of my chair. I was so shocked.
You were so shocked.
I was so shocked.
It was Sean Connery. That was the third movie. We're talking about the first one.
That's funny.
So Raiders of the Lost Ark, I think, is not just because Indiana Jones is the greatest hero of all time. It's just true. It's not up for debate.
Versus even better than Spider-Man?
Until the fifth movie comes out, and then we're all going to be like,
Indiana Jones in the Pursuit of a Hip. It was a movie that still holds up, and I watch it all the time. I mean, it's not my favorite Indiana Jones movie. I know that's sacrilege, but Temple of Doom is my favorite. But Raiders of the Lost Ark is a movie that start to finish, I don't know how he managed to pull it off, but I think a lot of it has to do with Spielberg was already filming it as a period piece. So you're already behind the times, so to speak. So he didn't have to do a lot of flashy effects. The truck chase is still, I think, the best piece of action in cinema history. I really think from start to finish that scene is the most well put together action scene in film history. Still holds up to this day. People try to copy it all the time. Wonder Woman just basically tried to redo that whole scene. I mean, it gets mimicked and copied all the time.
Like almost verbatim, you would say?
Yeah, I would say it's the same damn scene. Yeah. They said it was an homage. I'm like, that's a Tarantino homage. That was just basically a ripoff.
Totally.
And the hero is flawed but fabulous. The heroine is tough but timely. I mean, she's such a great character because she's not a damsel in distress. I mean, she's somebody that's formidable. And
yes,
the villain is formidable, but also kind of relatable. Like you can kind of understand, you know, where Belloc is coming from to various degrees. And the ultimate bad guys are Nazis, which means everybody gets to hate them. Like there's no debate on that. Bad, bad, bad. There's, you know, all the way across the board. And even when they get to the one special effect where the faces melt off and you kind of wonder, does that still hold up? I find that it does. I find that it doesn't bother me.
Absolutely it does.
In any way, shape, or form. So, and I know Big Bang Theory had their little thing about how that plot doesn't work and Indiana Jones didn't matter. It's dumb. It's wrong. I can't deal with it. I just can't. So please don't shout that at me. Nate Bruce, I'm talking to you. You keep wanting to tell me about this. It's wrong. It's wrong. It's wrong. They got that whole debate and argument wrong. Indiana Jones is the only reason they found the Ark. Indiana Jones is the only reason that the Ark was in United States custody. That's all I'm going to say. I'm walking away from it.
It's true.
Makes me tired. Whew. All right. So let's talk about some other timeless movies. This is open discussion. Just throw out some movies you think are timeless. And if we debate it, so be it. Now, Goonies, Troy, why don't you just start with Goonies? Because you got kind of cut off with that one since you tried to steamroll it into an honorable mention. So what about Goonies? Why is that timeless?
Because I'm still waiting to this day that some theme park will build the Goonies water slide that puts me into the middle of a pirate ship when I come out on the other end.
That's what makes it timeless because of that?
Every time I watch it, I'm like, they need to build that water slide. They totally need to build the water slide. No, I think it's just you could pick up the Goonies and you could put it into today's environment. Someone could sit down and watch it and go, oh, this is a great movie. It's about that 80s era or something because of the cars. But you could watch it today and I think people would absolutely love it. You could re-release it in the theater and people would go like, there's a new movie called The Goonies. Let's go watch it. And people would go watch it and not realize that it actually came out back in the 80s. Because it's really that good. I actually watched it with my kids and the kids were like, this was in the 80s? This is really fun. So I think that's really the test. It's like if the kids like it and it's an old movie, then you know it's timeless.
You don't think today's audiences would be like, it's so weird that Mikey makes out with his brother's girlfriend.
It was Carrie Green. I'd make out with my brother's girlfriend.
Just checking. All right.
They might be confused why Martha Plimpton looks so different, but because they were watching some TV show that Martha Plimpton was in, but
I didn't even know she was still in one. That's good for her. I would throw in Casablanca. I think Casablanca is a movie that still is pretty timeless. Now, granted, it's black and white, but there's nothing flashy or it's really all about story characters and the story and the characters and the love story and really how nobody wins in that story. I mean, nobody really gets what they really want in that story. So it's kind of a sad love story and it still plays. It's still beautiful. The acting's pretty stellar. And it's one where I can, even though I will honestly say it's not even like one of my favorite movies. It's not,
But whenever I've watched it, I'm like, this is a rare movie of that time that really still holds up.
Well, I'm going to put two together just because they come from the man, the myth, the legend, the Spielberg. So Jaws and E.T. We talked already about Jaws a little bit, but E.T. is just one of those that I don't know how this weird, creepy alien thing doesn't actually seem outdated. You know, I don't know how that doesn't, that it just doesn't make sense to me, but it works. It still works. I feel like I could show this to my goddaughters and they would be like, oh my gosh, he's weird and creepy, which is fine because everybody thought he was weird and creepy then too. But it very still
slimy.
Works.
He's very slimy.
Yeah, yeah. And it's just a beautiful story that is not one that's gone away. I feel like that's a timeless story itself.
It's an absolutely beautiful movie. I just rewatched it not too long ago. And besides the fact that it looks like E.T.'s dipped in KY jelly, besides that, it's very much one of the greatest friendship stories, I think, in film. Like, it's just such a beautiful, selfless friendship story about a boy and an alien who come together. They care about each other. They help each other. And it's just very emotional and beautiful and all the way around. And Amanda, you're talking about Jaws. Who doesn't? I mean, I do watch that every single year, at least once per year, if not more. And I don't think, aside from Raiders, obviously, I can't think of another movie that holds up as well as Jaws does, especially for a horror movie. How many horror movies do you watch 40 years later that still are as effective now as they were then, especially when it's about a giant mechanical shark that was broken?
And because they literally like made the movie as they went.
Yeah.
With the thing that didn't work.
Hey, you got to do what you got to do.
It's so funny. I'm going to throw out National Lampoon's Vacation. Classic Chevy Chase. The jokes land every single time, even in today's culture. The Pac-Man scene where it's taking Pac-Man across and like throwing the old Atari up there. I think that's fantastic. That graphic still holds up because you know it's from that time. All of National Lampoon's Vacation is just fantastic. I mean, we were literally like, when we went to Disney 2 weeks ago and they were thinking they weren't going to let us in because of the COVID stuff, because it was supposed to be only California residents, which is such a bunch of garbage, even if you're vaccinated. We did get in, by the way. But I literally, as we were walking up, I was literally like, I'm totally going to bring a BB gun to the front gate.
It is.
So if you could just quote National Lampoon's like that out of nowhere and just be like, where's Mickey Mouse? I'm going to totally be like, where's that damn mouth dream like Marty Moose? I think that's when you can call up memes and conversations in that way. You just know that movie's timeless because then you could just go home and watch it, which I did.
Did you strap your grandma on the roof?
No, grandma did not travel with us.
Just checking.
But if she did, I was only a mile from the thing. So since I had no room in the car because the car I rented was super small, I totally would have.
Nice. Poor grandma.
I got you a seat. Don't bitch about it. It's free.
It's two blocks, Grandma. You'll be fine.
I'm glad you said that one and not Christmas Vacation, because Christmas Vacation I don't think is timeless, but I would say Vacation is.
We have to be careful, too, because you have to say National Lampoon's Vacation, because Vacation sucked.
Yes. The National Lampoon's Vacation. Chevy Chase.
Yes. Yeah. But, I mean, I do love me Christmas Vacation. I do.
I'm not knocking the movie. I'm just saying it's not timeless. Like, it's very dated. Like, when you watch it, it's like, oh, that's from the 80s, for sure.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Even, which is weird, even more so than National Lampoon's Vacation is, which is odd since it was actually, I think it was a early 90s movie when Christmas Vacation came out.
Yeah. I want to throw out a couple John Hughes movies. That's what I want to throw out.
Oh, those are always timeless.
It's yes.
Crazy. What, did you want to do it first?
All of them. No, go ahead.
Okay. Breakfast Club, I think. We still compare ourselves to those kids. Like when we're I think high school kids today still see themselves as those kids. It was such a perfect realization, I guess is the right word, of the different classes in a high school system, of the ecosystem of high school, of the different types of personalities. And even though now, obviously, they look very different, the types of personalities are very, very similar for many people. So that is one that really holds up. And Ferris Bueller's Day Off is also one where I think, you know, you can rewatch it and I think it still is timeless.
Planes, Trains, and Automobiles, every Thanksgiving required viewing.
Sure. Well, I want to be careful. Like, you start teetering between classic and what's timeless. So do you consider Planes, Trains, and Automobiles like a timeless movie?
Yes.
Okay.
I do.
I actually would still consider that one timeless too.
Okay. Just because he's got that fantastic monologue at the car rental place, which we've all thought about. Mm-hmm. And if you've never found it, go on YouTube and find Emma Stone recreated that. I don't remember which talk show it was, but when she was promoting Cruella, she actually did that verbatim from memory, and it was pretty stellar.
Wow, that's impressive.
I have a few 90s movies, which, you know, they obviously are getting a little bit close, but right. Not too close.
So we're going to vote then. And all right, let's go.
Titanic, definitely timeless to me. Is that one timeless for you all?
Which one?
Titanic.
Yes. I would... that one's tough because I, as a personal place in my heart, and I love the movie.
I go classic because I go what Titanic and James Cameron were able to do with the movie and what it did for cinema. I would fall it under classic versus timeless.
No, you know what? I could see that. I could see timeless on that one. I could, just because it still holds up. I mean, I watched it not too long ago, and there's not a flaw in that movie. The effects are phenomenal. Like, even for
except for the fact that there was plenty of room for him on that board. Plenty of room for him to slide up there.
I didn't say it didn't have its flaws, Troy. It's got its flaws. mainly that Rose was a murderer.
Okay, another one which I don't feel is debatable, Toy Story.
I could see that.
I could see that.
Yep.
And my other 90s one is Scream.
No, that's...
Actually, Scream and Shawshank Redemption. I had both of those. Shawshank was 90s, wasn't it?
Yep, sure.
Shawshank is timeless.
I love Scream. One of the best movies of all time. I don't know if it's timeless, though.
Really? I feel like I could watch it now, and I would still... It would.
No, so you can't...
Maybe I would.
It doesn't have the same effect. Like, I when feel you watch like it does. Once, maybe twice, you were like, oh, this is really good. But now that you know like the whole trick of it...
Oh, no.
It doesn't have the same...
You are wrong, the same sir.
This is
I watch that movie yearly.
You might get an ejection seat here. I don't know, man. That's a fantastic, like you could do that with the sequels. I think a lot of them, they rely a little too much on the surprise as a gimmick in the sequels, even though they still hold up as movies. But all right, I could probably see timeless for Scream. I think it's, you know, there's a lot of datedness there because there's a lot of 90s references too. Like there's a lot of pop culture references in it. That's the part that hurts it from being timeless because it's too pop culture centric. But a lot of those.
And were you thumbs up for Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah, I don't think there's any debate. Shawshank.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I had one more 90s that I forgot to mention. Sure. Pulp Fiction. I mean, it's on my list, but I forgot to say it.
Yes. Again, similar to Raiders. It was shot in it's paced in an earlier seeming time. So I think it holds up so much better because it dates itself as a movie.
So then in the vein of like Breakfast Club and John Hughes films, would you then say Clueless and Mean Girls would fit into that category?
Mean Girls, I could see Mean Girls. Clueless, I think, is very much a product of its time.
Mean Girls still has a few years to go before I could consider it a timeless or classic film. Because I feel like you have to have that 20-year mark.
What year was it? Do you know?
2004.
Okay.
It was a really early aughts. Okay. I thought it was right at the end of the 90s.
That's how old you are.
I know. Well, speaking of the 20-year mark, then, let's go back to E.T. Because E.T. had a 20th anniversary release where E.T. is literally floating in a bathtub and it looks terrible. So,
but they retcon that. They like if you
did they?
Yeah, I've got a brand new Blu-ray, or I bought it last year, and it does not have that. It does not have that extra shit, and it doesn't have the where he took the guns out and everything else. It doesn't have that.
Oh, really? Okay. I'll have to check to see if I got my my digital copy got retouched up.
Maybe I stole it. Ooh. I don't know.
Retouched up?
Maybe, but I didn't have that. But I see what you're saying. I mean, they added some stuff that they shouldn't have.
Because an E.T. would fall in the same category as Star Wars because you had the going back in and messing it up.
Mm-hmm. There was no need for that one. That one was just, it's timeless as it is.
That was a cash grab. Yep. That was 100% a cash grab.
Yep, absolutely. And I think Spielberg was worried because you can't have guns pointed at kids. I'm like, why not? Sometimes they did it. I mean, maybe not today's era. I probably shouldn't say that. Okay, let's just move on. I would throw in two movies I got to mention before we head out of here. Die Hard. I watch it all the time. Probably the one action movie that I think holds up best next to Raiders. Like it just, It's amazing how well that holds up still.
Yeah.
And the other one is Airplane. Now, I know.
Yeah.
Oh, classic.
It
for
feels
sure.
80s and it feels classic, but everything in that movie still hits, man. I mean, and if in fact, while you're watching it, you kind of wish you saw more of it today. You know, it's just like, it's so depressing. We don't get more shit like this because I miss it. Being all.
Yeah, I would say that definitely counts. That there are people that are my age, even that kind of grew up on it, and it hits our generation, and it hits the up and coming younger, like Gen Z generations, and I feel like it's not one that's going away because it's just really crass and funny.
Last one for me is Psycho. I think Psycho really, really just holds up exquisitely. I mean,
definitely.
It's my surprise face that you can't see because it's
see,
not
I know, I know, and it's probably not fair. Like anybody, a longtime listener is like, of course Hitchcock's going to be on there. Well, bitch, he was the best director ever. I don't know what to tell you. He made great movies. But I didn't say Rear
is
Window.
Is Rear Window not popping up?
I didn't say Rear Window. I said Psycho. It is a movie that I've watched all the time. And it, no matter when I've watched it, black and white or not, that story freaking holds up. And how it plays holds up. And I've seen people that have never even heard of it for whatever reason, because it's older probably. And they'll watch it and they're still surprised by how it ends. So, yeah, I still think it's timeless.
Especially when Hitchcock actually locked people out of cinemas if they were late to the movie.
Wait, it should be.
That was insane.
That's how it should be.
It should be.
Man did never get to see a movie, but that's how it should be.
Okay, let's backtrack. I'm late to everything, but I'm not late to movies usually, unless there's like a really good reason.
What happened at the beginning of Spiral?
Listen, Aaron. It was like 2 minutes. Very rarely.
Troy, anything from you? Any more from you?
I think that is my list.
Amanda?
I have one more to mention, and okay. I'm surprised that it hasn't been mentioned yet. The Wizard of Oz, 1939.
You think it's timeless?
I think it is. Even though we know that this would be done better today, I don't feel like anybody who watches it now is distracted by the creation of then.
Everything plays, yeah.
Yeah.
The songs still work across the board. Performances are fantastic. There's no effect that takes you out of the movie. So, yeah, okay. I would definitely see Wizard of Oz. Sure.
The Wizard. Maybe he's not as sharp today.
Maybe, but I mean, is it really distracting in that movie?
The crushed witch underneath the house, and you're like, oh, those are just some legs sticking next to a house.
No, that's still working.
But they don't show, but I
never
mean,
thought there was a body to begin with.
Yeah.
I know how special effects work. Like, they didn't kill this lady to make this movie, although that would be fantastic. Like, back in the 30s, they were just like, whatever it takes. We don't have money. Kill old witches.
We must go for the realism effect.
I like it. All right. You want to hear what listeners picked for the most timeless films?
Yes.
Okay. We'll start with number 10. Actually, we'll start with a tie for 10th. John Carpenter's The Thing and The Princess Bride tied for 10th. What say y'all? Timeless?
No.
Because?
I feel like The Princess Bride is a product of its time. I think it could still be considered a classic, but it is cheesy. It is like grade A cheesy. And
Airplane isn't?
It's good cheese. That Airplane is funny.
I just feel like The Princess Bride is already a little overrated, but I don't feel like it's timeless. I don't feel like anybody who pops it in is going to be like, yeah. And the thing I'm more lenient towards considering timeless, but it's more of like one of those cult classics more than like a timeless,
yeah,
you know,
I would agree with that.
One that you have to, that has to be in the movie collection.
I literally just came from a wedding where I was like, please dear God, don't do Princess Bride, please dear God, don't do, and sure enough somebody stood up and went marriage.
So what about you, Troy? Do you consider these two timeless?
Princess Bride I definitely do.
Okay, because you think it's still like, you watch it and it holds up perfectly.
Oh yeah, I would sit down and watch it right now because it's just that good.
All right.
The fire swamp works. The rats work.
How about The Thing?
I didn't like The Thing to begin with, so
okay.
I don't have an opinion on that one.
I wouldn't count either one. Princess Bride, mostly because I don't like Princess Bride. Sue me. And John Carpenter's The Thing.
I will.
I feel like it's dated. I feel like the effects
are fantastic. The story's great. But when I watch it, I feel like I'm watching an early 80s John Carpenter movie. And that's not a bad thing. I don't think that's a bad thing, but it just feels...
I was going to say, what are you saying there?
It feels very dated. When you watch it, it feels dated.
That's... The thing is, a movie that should be on like a must watch list. Like if you had to do a top like 200 or 100 movies of things that people who have never seen a movie before should watch, or things that you should have your kids watch as they're getting older and stuff. I feel like that's one of them, but I don't consider it timeless.
Okay.
It's just one to watch.
Number 9, E.T. We already talked about that one. Number 8, Star Wars. We talked about that. Number 7, The Shawshank Redemption. Talked about that. Aliens. Number 6. What say you about Aliens? Not Alien. Aliens.
Not Alien. Aliens.
I think no. I think that totally screams 80s when you watch it.
I wonder if the intent was for it to just be Alien, and then, you know, just out of habit, they typed Aliens. I don't know if that was intentional that they chose the second
one. I would have bought Alien. I think fans, they know the difference. Fans of those movies know. Aliens is James Cameron. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I think it was a summer blockbuster action shoot 'em up. I mean, it's good. I'd watch it, but I don't think it's timeless.
Okay. Nope, me either.
Then we got top 5. Back to the Future. Boop, boop.
That should be higher.
All right. Then we got Jaws, Raiders of the Lost Ark. Number 2 is the Lord of the Rings trilogy, which Lord of the Rings just sneaks in with our 20-year window. We kind of said before the show that the movie had to be at least 20 years old to qualify as timeless.
Return of the King doesn't count in that 20 years.
So let's say Fellowship. Fellowship counts, and I would say that works. Sure, that still plays.
Yeah.
It does, because I just watched it in beautiful 4K on IMAX. It was amazing.
There you go. So did I. Number 1, Jurassic Park. Absolutely. We've all agreed on that one. In fact, I would put that one very high up on my list. Like it would be close to Raiders and Jaws, honestly.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, you come around and you see the brontosauruses for the first time. It's still like, wow.
And you know
what? They did that in a movie.
That's 3 movies. Guess who directed all 3 of them? Guy that's going to Netflix.
I'm telling you.
He's good. He's good. I think that Spielberg's going to go somewhere.
But is he going to direct somewhere. Anything when it actually shows up to Netflix?
Hell no. That's the question. Well, not unless he goes to a theater. He ain't. He ain't doing that. Are you kidding me?
Nope.
Nope. Nope. He ain't backtracking. Even though he says he didn't say it now, I think he wants to make cinema. Movies that go to the cinema. But that could change. That, you know what? I think a lot of elitists are changing their mind. Look at Martin Scorsese. Boy, he changed his tune as soon as he couldn't get his money from studios anymore. And then he's like, well, I guess I'm going to streaming, going to Apple, going to Netflix, whatever it takes. Let's look at our upcoming releases. What are coming out soon?
Well, first up, we have America, the motion picture at June 30th, coming to Netflix, of course, in this adult animated version of America's Birth. A chainsaw-wielding George Washington teams with beer-loving bro Sam Adams to take down the Brits in a tongue-in-cheek riff on the American Revolution. Yes, this is an adult animated movie, and the trailer is freaking awesome. Go watch it.
America! Yeah.
I'm really kind of disappointed, actually, that it's not America, the motion picture.
Oh, my gosh.
God, I would watch that.
So Fear Street Trilogy on Netflix begins July 2nd. So you'll get the first one, which is Fear Street 1994. This is a trilogy series based on R.L. Stine's classic Fear Street book series. And for the 1994, it's about after a series of brutal slayings, a teen and her friends take on an evil force that's plagued their notorious town for centuries.
It sounds like Nightmare on Elm Street or Jason or any of those other movies.
Yeah.
But I hear the books are good. The Forever Purge will hit theaters July 2nd. On the run from a drug cartel, a Mexican couple battle vicious thugs who feel that the annual purge should not end at dawn.
Boom, boom, boom.
I feel like I haven't even seen anything marketable about this one, which is shocking because usually they're all about getting ads out there and promoting the new Purge movie. For 4th of July.
I saw the trailer before In the Heights.
Yeah.
So the campaign must have just started.
And it was not good.
It was not good.
It was like a John Carpenter movie directed by Eli Roth, which means bad.
Starring Miles Teller.
That's all I was missing. Oh, boy. All right. So recent film and TV recommendations we haven't previously talked about. I do want to mention I've been watching Bosch, getting ready for season 7, which comes out June 25th. I can't wait. The final season until it goes on to IMDb TV or something like that, I think. Just a show I highly recommend if you haven't seen it. There's every season's like a different crime. Bosch is a great character. Titus Welliver is just a really intense, fun actor to watch. And he really finally gets the property to shine. His relationship with his daughter is really, really sweet. And the crimes are just like, they're really fun to watch as they play out. What about you guys?
I have been watching Ted Lasso. I know you raved about it. And so I'll be very brief in my thoughts. I love it.
All the things. It's amazing.
I really, really didn't expect to care about it at all because of what the story is. But wow, I'm really impressed with it. And how perfect is my timing? Because the next season comes out on July 23rd, I think. So
It sure does.
Great recommendation. If you haven't seen it, it's on Apple Plus TV or whatever they're called. The worthless streaming service. But it does have a few good shows.
It's Quibi. It's Quibi. Yeah. Quibi Plus.
No, there's actually really good stuff on Apple TV Plus. So if you can get a free trial, Ted Lasso is worth the free trial.
It is. I would say so, for sure.
Isn't it great to have a character that optimistic that doesn't feel cheesy or cliched?
Yes.
Like a genuine, genuine character.
I feel like this is kind of the level of positivity and energy that I needed to like really jumpstart us navigating through, hopefully, fingers crossed, the end of this pandemic.
Or they got you through the pandemic while it was still going on, because I watched it when it came out and it was amazing. And I was like, thank God, someone else that's not yelling at somebody for a change.
True.
Right.
So good. And what's great about it is that it actually is based on a commercial, I believe, from NBC Sports, was the character that Jason Sudeikis played for this. And the fact that a commercial turned into a TV series is freaking fantastic.
Glad that it did. And you've got the weekly streaming recommendation, Troy.
I do, but I have to tout Blacklist, I guess, because it is the season 8 finale this week. So if you are wanting to know all the answers and want to know what the front of the puzzle box looks like, because you're thinking, maybe I might watch that Blacklist show, you could watch the finale this week and then go back and start it all on Netflix and see what it was all about. But
start with the end, and it won't make any damn sense because there's so many clues from the previous 8 seasons. And then you can listen to the Blacklist Exposed podcast and you can be filled in on all the clues. And you can, is your plug complete now?
Exactly.
Okay.
You plugged it. I did. And I just said, watch the show.
I was getting there before you.
But no, the streaming recommendation, the entire first season of Big Shot over on Disney Plus, it's kind of like a Mighty Ducks meets Hardball mashup. It's basically on the hardwood. It's an all girls school, high school basketball team. Basically, John Stamos is the main character as an NCAA coach. He chucks a chair at a referee and gets banned from the NCAA, and then he takes over the coaching job at Westbrook. It's full of a lot of heart, a lot of warmth, just coaching these girls' lives and the things that the ladies are going through as they navigate their high school career. It's probably the best version of Stamos that's been on TV for a while, probably since Uncle Jesse. I would definitely check it out. It was way better than Mighty Ducks Game Changers. So if you're looking for some Uncle Jesse love, check out Big Shot over on Disney Plus.
That's a rave from you, too, because I know you were really looking forward to Mighty Ducks. So that's too bad about that.
I mean, Mighty Ducks was fine. It was background fold the laundry type clothes type show.
Yeah.
Still, it wasn't as riveting. I think, no offense to Lauren Graham, but Lauren Graham it should have been about Emilio, and it was about Lauren Graham, and Lauren Graham wasn't good.
And you're saying that it's a fan of Lauren Graham, so that's something, because you love Gilmore Girls.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? We got a little bit more, but hang on. You can share your thoughts on this episode or anything else in our Facebook group or on Twitter at @BuyPopcorn. Our site is thehollywoodoutsider.com, and you can email us at feedback@thehollywoodoutsider.com. If you got any thoughts you want to share, please rate us and subscribe on your preferred podcast app. You can find Troy on the Blacklist Exposed podcast, as well as at Troy Heinrichs. Amanda on Veronica's Marshmallows and Smirk and at Sink Into This, and me on the Blacklist Exposed and presenting Hitchcock and at Aaron Smirks. Now, before we leave, it's time for, we always do a game or something at the end. And this time it's called, I Know It's Weird, But It Just Bugs Me. And this is something that I wanted to do because I think there's some weird things and they bug me. So I want to talk about them. So each host is picking something that annoys them about an actor or a movie and explain why this weird thing bothers them. For example, these are the examples. Michael B. Jordan's mustache never touches his beard, and it bugs me. Tom Cruise is more worried about doing his own stunts than acting. It bugs Amanda. Troy thinks most movies are 20 minutes too long. It bugs him. See what I'm saying? So that's how this works. So I'm going to start. So I've been rewatching Bosch, right? You guys heard me just talk about that. Getting ready for the final season. And Titus Welliver has the longest sideburns on TV in the most recent season. I mean, it's like he has a porn stash on each side of his face, like a 70s full porn stash. Like he is ready for some Ashkin. You know, he's just ready for 70s love. And I can't understand why nobody in the styling department won't make him shave or tell him this is a bad call. This doesn't look good on you. And it's to the point where I'm watching and like there are moments where a very powerful dramatic moment is happening. And I'm just like, I can't take you seriously, shave. Like that's where I end up shouting at the screen. It's very uncomfortable. So it bugs me.
I think that would have been great to see the man in black from Lost with giant sideburns.
Just giant sideburns. Like, almost, just grow the beard, man, if that's what you're trying to do, or make a decision. Like, commit. Just commit. One way or the other, just commit.
I've been trapped on this island for centuries. I didn't have a barber.
I can only shave
so
part of my
I'm going to mention a general one, because I know you want this to be more specific to, like, a specific actor or movie. One thing in general that bothers me is that nobody ever says goodbye when they're hanging up the phone.
Oh, yeah.
In movies or TV. Yeah. It's one line. Just say, all right, bye. Just add it. But a specific thing that it irritates me is Harrison Ford has this incessant need to point in all of his movies. Just like, I'm going to point at you. I'm going to point over there. I'm going to point in your face. And I was like, thinking about this, I'm pretty sure, I don't know if it's just me, but I was always raised that you just don't point at people. Like, it's rude, and it's just very aggressive. And so that tendency for him to just, like, always be pointing.
Well, you're not Harrison.
I don't know.
He always points at the ladies.
Yeah.
In all the Indiana Jones movies, he's always pointing at a lady. He points at Chewbacca. I totally see that.
I don't like it.
Do you ever think maybe it's because of his age, and he's just like, which way do I go? That way? How about that way? That way? That's what it is.
Well, mine is the fact that Warner Brothers created this amazing 1980s movie, and Warner Brothers actually has licensed its characters to the Six Flags amusement parks. And the fact that they have this license agreement with Six Flags, which also owns this side thing called Hurricane Harbor, which has water slides. Why haven't they made the damn Goonies water slide yet?
That would be really fun.
It's all connected. I was wondering where you were going. I'm like, what are we? Is it a Bugs Bunny thing? Like, he's got a Bugs Bunny fetish? Is that what's going to happen here? Okay.
Just the Warner Brothers studio lot in LA tour is the best tour. And it's freaking hot as hell on the tour. Put the damn water slide at the end of the tour.
Make it as part
just
of the tour.
Just let me have a refreshing
Maybe that's
moment.
How you do the tour. It slides you all the way through the park. Bam.
Ooh.
That'd be awesome.
Into a pirate harbor.
I mean, and you could charge twice as much then, Warner Brothers. Call
You'd
me.
You'd be so chafed. Like your ass would just be chafed. It'd be so, I don't think that's a good, everybody's going to, there'd be blood on that slide because it'd just be chafed canyon.
When they get down to the bottom, they'd all be flat.
Oh, wow. All right. Well, that's going to do it for this episode. Remember, the next time you head to a theater, buy popcorn. Hey, Troy, before Amanda heads out, I got to tell you this. I was pretty proud. This week, I introduced Amanda to the naughtiness in Disney lyrics. She never stopped to think how pervy the Little Mermaid was when that song is like, everything's better, downwards wetter, check it and see. What I'm saying? Pervy.
I mean, we already know that the Disney covers, like all of the covers of the boxes from the 90s had some phallic symbol to
all
it.
All of them.
And that's fine. Okay.
Not to mention the priest boner when he's like burying Ursula and Eric together.
Everything's better down where it's wetter. Check it and see.
Everything was so innocent and now it's all been ruined. And I don't know. It just makes me sad to hear that song now because I feel like I'm inappropriate because now I'm thinking about the inappropriateness of it, of a child's movie, a children's movie. It's making me feel bad, and I'm not the one who talked about it.
What is the line? He's got some hot crustacean buns.
It's just so weird. They think some of this stuff is so innocent, but if you really listen to it, it's like, oh, shit, that's nasty.
It's dirty. Yeah. Those are the writers that choke their ladies in the bedroom. They're freaky.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, how do you think they came up with her song, her vocal?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's totally her orgasm experience.
Oh, shit.
Oh, my gosh. This is so wrong.
Childhood.
Oh, boy. I'm not watching this movie for a very long time.
I'm watching it twice tonight.